Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to talk about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for July 2014 is sold through Diamond to retailers. And of course, they're going to have a few left on the store shelves so we can buy them, which is good. So this is sell in, not sell through. We've been talking about these numbers for ages and ages and ages. And remember way back when we used to have kind of a nice even split? We've got that again this time almost.
All right.
We've got a fairly even-ish four-way split. DC had 28.63% of the total units for the top 300 trades. Image had 22.86% of those same units for those same trades. Marvel 74%. And you've got to be wondering, who has that remaining 26.77%? Everybody else.
Everybody else,
yeah. It's about another two dozen publishers or whatever. But, you know, for a while, we'd been seeing that same sort of a thing where about a quarter goes to DC, about a quarter goes to Marvel, about a quarter goes to Image, and about a quarter goes to everybody else. Image, of course, really strong trade program these days as a result of, in addition to Walking Dead, having a number of other really strong properties. And it's funny because those other properties, and perhaps just hitting a saturation point, we're not seeing quite as many of the Walking Dead volumes on the list each and every month. But again, when you get to having that many trades out for any given property, you've got to expect that not all of them are going to make the list each and every month.
Do you think that'll change when the TV show starts back up? You think we're in a lull right now in the middle of July here?
I certainly think that's possible, but it's also likely that any bump that it gets from the TV show is also going to be more felt in the mass market than in the direct market.
Okay.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens when the TV show goes off the air, which will happen eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
You know, it may be a couple of seasons. It may be next year. It may be a decade from now. Who knows? Although I can't imagine it lasting quite that long. Few TV shows ever do shy of, what, Law and Order or something.
Yeah, right.
But it certainly has been getting a helping from the TV show. Everybody pretty much knows about it by this point. So I do think that's going to hit, again, that saturation point. There comes a point of how many more people need to discover this property?
Right.
You know, I can't imagine they're all... I mean, there are some left, obviously, but I can't imagine they're all that many.
Well, and you're right. And almost the flip to that is people are still discovering Saga, and that's why we're seeing Saga in the top 10 so often, month after month.
With that, with a property that's, what, a year and a half, 2 years old?
Yeah.
Versus Walking Dead's over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So there does come a point where you'd think everybody who's interested would be more or less hip to the fact it's out there, because neither one is low profile.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's interesting just to see how Image is increasing the number of properties they've got out there, because at one point it was Kirkman's show, period.
Yes.
You know, and it's still heavily in that direction, but, you know, decreasingly so from month to month. Shall we? Do you want to do any of these publishers look particularly interesting to you this month, or should we just jump over to the list?
Well, you know, I mean, the only one that keeps creeping up every month, and we saw it last month, was Viz. I mean, you know, they're still kind of hanging around, you know, John, and they, you know, 8 brand new items this month, and yeah, I mean, they're like the company that doesn't go away. You know, I mean, they just keep on popping up month after month, and there is an audience for their books. I mean, sure, we see DC and Image and Marvel and Dark Horse and IDW in the top 5 there like we do, but then there's Viz, there's the manga crowd right there. I mean, even Archie had such a strong showing in June, and, you know, they're behind them. So, and then we're going to talk about Random House, I'm sure, and why they're high in the list with only 3 items here and did so well.
Three reorder for a total of 6 for Random House.
3, yeah, but they had the Brian Lee O'Malley Seconds book, you know, which did very well. So, you know, it's just, it's funny, you know, and this is the month where everybody kind of got their books into, you know, Diamond. I don't know if this is any bearing. You'd probably have more of an idea, but I always think it's interesting when I do my show and when Comic-Con rolls around in July, I always like to see what are the books that are coming out the week before and the week of Comic-Con. So they are there on the shelves, you know, on time kind of thing that these publishers can showcase at the biggest event of our industry. And, you know, I think that putting the books in Diamond so they are on time does that too. I mean, look at on the comic side, we got Rock Raccoon. All the books are out for Guardians of the Galaxy, which we're going to talk about, mm-hmm. you know, just in time for the movie. I mean, there's a lot of things that you got to look at when the calendar rolls around to July and how you're going to schedule all your properties to fit in and to sell to the mass market like that.
I think that's going to be really interesting next year
mm-hmm.
because Comic-Con is going to be, I believe, the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th of July.
That's right. You did mention that. Yeah.
So very early in the month. That'll be the second shipping week of July. So the books coming out, trying to get there a week early or whatever, would still fall into the July numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike this year and most years where it's later in July for Comic-Con, it'll have a couple of more weeks for some of those things to even get some reorder activity. You know, so we may see a few things at the tail end of June, because if I were a publisher trying to get something out for next year's Comic-Con, I'd want it that last week of June.
Yeah.
Just to be sure, because that 4th of July weekend, if anything goes wrong, you're really pushing it up to the wire to get your books.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
But, you know, with Comic-Con being such a big aspect of not only just the comic book industry, but the entertainment industry in general, having a book out for Comic-Con or not, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if for bragging rights or presentation or whatever, you know, plus the ability to actually, you know, sell copies and such. Now, that was actually something that got a little bit of discussion after Con this year was variant covers and publishers selling those.
Mm-hmm.
Because Chuck over at Mile High.
Chuck Rosansky?
Chuck Rosansky, yeah. He posted, he does his newsletter. And every year during Con, it's the usual, getting the booth ready. Gosh, it's a lot of work. Gee, are we going to break even or not? He's got a writing style that just has a underdog come from behind kind of attitude towards it. And I don't think it's necessarily intentional or whatever. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, in this case, it was very much, are they going to make their money or not? Because what was undercutting them was a lot of publishers had publisher-only exclusives that you could buy at their booth, which was draining money, interest, and resources, you know, away from people spending the money at the Mile High booth. So a number of his couple of daily emails were, am I going to come back next year? And at one point, it was looking very doubtful. I mean, the other thing he mentioned along those lines was typically the exclusives were pretty much played out heavily on Wednesday. But this year, they played out through Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're spending time in the lines chasing those things down, that gives you less time to go head over to a comic book booth and go spend some money there. So it's the impact that Comic-Con has on the business side of comics is pretty phenomenal mm-hmm. and is really just heightened during the whole month of July.
Right.
Now, the other thing you mentioned there was the whole Guardians of the Galaxy thing, of course.
Yeah.
That movie opening at the beginning of August, July was the time for Marvel to get as much of that material out as they could, and they got quite a bit of it out. And, of course, they've also not only got the Guardians of the Galaxy, but they've launched a Legendary Star-Lord series and a Rocket Raccoon series. Now, the Rocket Raccoon, and Sam and I will talk about this some more, too, that was offered through a Loot Crate deal. You're familiar with Loot Crate?
Yeah, but do explain it for me again. Yeah.
Basically, if you like going to Comic-Con and getting t-shirts, freebies, and all that kind of a stuff, Loot Crate, Nerd Block, and there's like one or two others like this, they all offer a service where for, in Loot Crate's deal, it's LOOT space crate as in a box, and it's .com, I'm pretty sure, for their website. For, I think it's $13.67 a month, they'll send you a box that's got $40 plus of retail price value.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, for the July shipment, it included a copy of Rocket Raccoon number one in every one of those boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And depending what reports you read, anywhere from somewhere over 100,000 to maybe 180,000 plus of these crates have gotten shipped out, or that many copies of Rocket Raccoon at least went out just through that one vendor. Now, since that vendor goes through Diamond, that got included in these numbers. Now, to me, it raises the whole question of, doesn't that sort of defeat the purpose of these numbers?
Mm-hmm.
The chief purpose of which is to let retailers kind of gauge what's the national level of interest, and then based on what they know of their customer base, should they be increasing, decreasing orders, or what should they be doing? And anything you do as a creator, publisher, or whatnot to game those numbers, to skew that
right
metric, great, you get the sales, that's awesome, that's great. In this case, it also gets comics out to non-comic fans who aren't setting foot into comic stores, but it also defeats the purpose because it's going to make it, it's potentially going to prolong that honeymoon period for the title a little bit longer than would otherwise be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Add to that the whole hoopla around the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, which I haven't seen yet as we record this, but all indications are it's pretty good. You've got a number of variables getting thrown in at one time, which could make it really hard for retailers to figure out how much of this is hype, how much of this is real, how many should they be ordering of what.
So are you for it or against it? What do you think?
I mean, the loot crate idea?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, yeah, it skews the numbers, but you know, Marvel's bottom line is to get the books in the hands of readers and possibly that to sell, you know, issue number two. So, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, I do see how it can skew the numbers, but you know, if Marvel can make that deal with Loot Crate and Loot Crate can make that deal with Marvel, fantastic.
I agree with all of that, and particularly the part about getting it in the hands of potential new readers.
Yeah.
What I question is, one, was that really the right book to do that with? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And more importantly, is that going to bump sales of the second issue?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's entirely possible and probable we will see an 80 or 90% drop in sales on that title.
Sure.
For that next issue. Because it strikes me as a title that's, you know, a 30,000-ish level title. Now, maybe it'll surprise me. I mean, Harley Quinn certainly surprised me of late.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, that means the overwhelming percentage of people who got it in that loot crate either didn't read it, read it, didn't like it, read it, liked it, but had no idea how to get another issue.
Yeah.
If it doesn't have really good sales on that second issue, kind of what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good idea, but the execution of it has me curious in terms of,
yeah,
will it pay off or not?
Well, and you know me, I mean, I'm a marketing guy, and I mm-hmm. think that was a great marketing concept, but you're right. It's only going to work if they're going to get, you know, good enough sales with issues 2, 3, 4, and possibly even the trade paperback down the line. Now, on the same kind of route, when you're talking about, you know, almost use a dirty word like payola, right? But how does it, and we've talked about this a long time ago, but it's kind of the same way, maybe it's not the same way, but how Diamond catalog showcases a Marvel book and a DC book. And I'm sure that being on the cover of Diamond helps sales to some extent for that particular issue that's being showcased. You think?
I would have to actually do a little bit of analysis on that.
Yeah.
To go pull the list of what's been on their covers and stuff.
Yeah.
And then has there been any kind of a bump as a result?
Yeah.
Part of the issue with doing that kind of analysis, other than it's time consuming and I just haven't done it.
Get on it, John. Come on.
I know. Slacker. Jeez. But a lot of those things tend to be first issues. They tend to be high profile things that would have garnered interest anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of that could be attributed to being on the cover of previews is a little bit harder to figure out than may seem at first glance. But in terms of the other things they highlight inside the previews, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure they said this at San Diego, that's just what the guys putting previews together personally find interesting.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Now, as to what goes on the cover, there's other issues with that. You know, right. I believe...
And we talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, there are some, I believe, contractual, you know, agreements with Marvel, DC, etc.
Yeah.
But it would be definitely interesting to find out if there is really kind of any kind of serious advantage to that. It can't hurt.
Yeah.
But I would be surprised if that causes a noticeable bump in sales. I'm just trying to think. Well, actually, this month's...
it's Earth's 2, World's End.
I was going to say, if it was just Earth's 2, this would have been a good month to check and when this issue comes out. But it's,
and the backside is Witches, which I'm not familiar with.
I believe that's a...
Image title, maybe?
I believe it's an Image thing by Scott Snyder. Yeah, it is.
Oh, that's Scott Snyder. You're right. That's Scott Snyder's. You're right.
But if the Earth 2 World's End was not World's End, but the ongoing series, mm-hmm. that would give a benchmark to say, okay, boom, it bumps up or it doesn't. Whereas now it's just going to be a factor in how Earth 2 World's End starts.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have a benchmark to compare against.
Right.
You know. But certainly anything that increases visibility of a title, by and large, is a good thing. Anything that gets it into more hands is a good thing. But if that doesn't equate to increasing sales of the next installment, it's not as good of a thing, you know?
Right.
These are, both on the comic side and on the trade side, serialized fiction. And you want people to keep coming back. If they're just there for, again, a single, you know, variant cover, gimmick issue, or you know, shocking story twist or whatever, that's sales, but that's short-term sales. It's not a long-term gain. And really, the long-term is where I think I don't say the big money is at, but that's where the serious benefit is. You know, the item that topped the list this time around by a wide margin is Walking Dead Volume 21 trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
21 volumes in, I think you can agree that Kirkman's playing the long game on this. 23,953 units, so nearly 24,000 units.
Yeah.
That's better than the next four items combined. And if we work our way up the list, starting at the bottom with 300, it is the equivalent of 45 items. I mean, that's the equivalent of rank 256 on through 300. Did I have that right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off having something that slow and steadily builds and keeps readers coming back than kind of playing the whack-a-mole game where instead of whacking the mole down, you're boosting sales up. You're juggling plates at that point. You know, it takes marketing effort every month to keep the plates spinning and get people interested in something. And is getting people interested in Earth 2 World's End going to dilute the interest in whatever the DC promoted thing was on the previous previews cover it had or something?
Right.
So it's interesting. And
mm-hmm.
going back to the loot crate thing, how many of those people who get it are going to be interested enough in it to actually read the comic, like the comic, and know where to get the next issue?
Yeah.
Much less actually get the next issue.
Have you done Loot Crate yet?
I have not.
I'm tempted to do it just for a month to see what I get. You know, it's like you don't know what you're going to get, really. I mean, you can put your interest down, I think, but that's about it.
Well, they do themed ones every month.
Yeah.
There's a YouTuber I follow that gets the Nerd Block every month.
Okay.
And usually there's something cool because he does unboxing videos.
Oh, you'll have to send me that link. Yeah.
It's Barnacle's Nerdgasm. He does a bunch of tech stuff also.
Okay.
He does 3D printing. He's doing some software stuff these days. A very interesting guy. Very much a geek. He's one of us. I don't know if he's necessarily a comic reader, but otherwise
he's one of us. He's got the disease.
He's getting nerd block. He's getting this stuff shipped to him every month. You know, that casual fans don't do that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So, you know, it's an interesting concept, and if you can't go to the con, bring the con to you kind of idea.
Yeah.
Whoever came up with that idea was clever. And I don't know if there are others than just those two, Loot Crate and Nerd Block. I'm thinking there's at least one more, but I don't recall. So again, I've considered it, but $40 worth of merchandise at $13.67 implies they're getting stuff at two-thirds off at least to break even. And what was interesting with the Rocket Raccoon is not only was it the top retail rank, it was the top our top quantity rank, it was also the top retail rank. Granted, it outsold the next item, which was Batman, by a 2.5-to-1 margin.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, well, yeah.
So Loot Crate definitely had something to do with that. I mean, there's no doubt.
At least a third, possibly two-thirds of the sales.
Yeah.
And it was up at $293,913. Now, that is so far beyond sustainable as to not even be funny. It is so. It is like 200,000 above the next number one issue Marvel had on the list.
Which was what?
In this case, it was Spider-Man 2099.
Okay.
But it's gonna plummet, and that's part of why I'm thinking an 80 or 90% drop is totally within, you know, possibility.
Yeah.
That if it doesn't pan out on the next issue, what was the benefit of doing? How much of a discount did Loot Crate get for ordering a zillion copies or something?
Yeah.
I mean, they ordered enough to pretty much guarantee the top slot for that title.
Yeah.
And frankly, if I were Marvel working the deal, I would have said the minimum you've got to order is, you know, 120,000 or whatever I thought would take.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's probably exactly what they did. Yeah.
You know, and at that point, if they're getting a good deal and stuff, you know, yeah. Why not? I don't want to say it's buying the top slot, but the sales through Loot Crate are fundamentally different than the sales through comic stores.
Yeah.
And
well, it'll also be interesting to see if Loot Crate does this, you know, again sometime. If this is, they'll do a deal with DC or, you know, or Image for Walking Dead, you know, 200 or something like that, you know?
If... Well, actually, 128 would have been a great example for Walking Dead if that had been a Loot Crate thing. People who know of the show, maybe haven't read the thing, good jumping on point, get them hooked. Man, that I could see doing really well.
Yeah.
But you've got to have the right issue at the right time and the right follow-through after that to actually convert those people into readers. You know, and that's hard to do. You know, when... We've got something at just under 24,000, and then the next item is around 6,600. Pretty big gap there on the trade side.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things people are interested in, but not to the point of necessarily going out and buying. You know, it's, again, whoever can figure out that aspect and close that deal and get from interest to the actual paying customer, they're going to run the board on this stuff. Because, I mean, going back to an earlier comment about how Viz is kind of like, I don't say, you were kind of implying they're making a comeback, if you will.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I mean, they were off the radar for a few months, and now they're back. Yeah.
I would say that's a fair categorization. What I think they're missing that they did have at one point was a really on-the-ball PR guy. Because at one point, a couple of years back, I was getting press releases, it seemed like left, right, and center from Viz.
So was I. You're right.
I forget the guy's name. But I mean, he was getting the word out. He was very proactive, and they've had other PR people, and they're not doing a bad job, but they're not doing an, oh my God, this is amazing job either. For a publisher that just recently had trade paperback, I guess. Yeah. Trade paperback tying into a movie that came out this past summer that flew under people's radar. It's like, really? You've got a Tom Cruise movie, Edge of Tomorrow, coming out. You've got the manga it's based on coming out. Promote that heavy. And they didn't. Now, the fact it had a different name certainly didn't help it. It was All You Need Is Kill. My sister and I did an episode on this. But, you know, a aggressive marketing campaign on that would not have been out of the question. And it might have paid off. It might not have. Personally, I thought the manga was a little too abridged of the story. But, you know, we'll... It was an opportunity I think they missed. So what else do we got in the top 10 that looks interesting? A couple of volumes of Saga, no big surprise there.
Well, we got Brian Lee O'Malley's book, Seconds, came out. For, you know, rank 5. For $25, a graphic novel. I don't know if this is a soft cover or hardcover, John, but it did, you know, fairly well. I mean, he's got a name. He has this first thing since Scott Pilgrim, and 4,879 units, you know, beating out Saga by slightly, you know, and Deadpool.
Saga Volume 3, but not Saga Volume 1.
Saga Volume 3, I'm sorry. Yes, there's other, yeah, so right behind Saga Volume 1. But, yeah, so, you know, it's good to see, you know, highest priced item, 25, until rank 15 when Guardians of the Galaxy Abnett & Lanning complete collection comes out. So yeah, you know, I'm not a Scott Pilgrim fan. It's just not my genre, but, it's good to see Brian Lee O'Malley back and doing more comics, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly cause this is original to graphic novel, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I figured. Not quite 5,000 units, but close. That's good standing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, like you said, just beat out the Deadpool trade. Now that trade, it beat out by, I guess, 10 units. That Deadpool is reorder activity.
Yes,
and it's the fourth time that's been on the list. But still, it's the fourth best selling original material on the list this time around with Brian Lee O'Malley's second. So not bad. There's a Again, the trade side, as you well know, longer shelf life. We see a lot more reorder activity on this than I see on the comic side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for a very interesting kind of dichotomy of everything over on that side is very much it's here today and next issue tomorrow, you know, or at least on a month-to-month basis, whereas this, sometimes stuff just gets on the list and stays. Other times, man, you blink, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Pilgrim did well. It'll be interesting to see if Seconds has that kind of staying power or not.
Yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, we've got the Guardians of the Galaxy by Abnett & Lanning, that complete collection down at rank 15 that did 3,636 units. What's the page count on that thing?
Oh, that's probably, I can look it up. It's probably 300 or so at least.
It's only collecting 12 issues, so yeah, about 300.
Yeah.
Maybe 240-ish or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I believe that's the run that's pretty much the basis for the movie, at least thematically, if not plot-wise.
That's the 2008. This was an offshoot. It is 296 pages. Look at that. This team came out of Annihilation Conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a sequel to Annihilation. In the real team, the first incarnation of this team, because I just read it last night. I'm rereading Annihilation and Conquest and everything for fun. And they were in, I believe it was Star-Lord number 2, is where it's not, they don't call it Guardians of the Galaxy, but that's the team. Rocket's in it, Groot is in it, Captain Universe is in it, Star-Lord, and a couple other characters as well. But
Captain Universe, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Man, there was a character that at one point looked like they were going to be bringing Captain Universe back in a big way.
Yep.
And then poof, gone.
Gone.
I've got to wonder if there's something up behind the scenes, some kind of legality or copyright issue, something.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but who was it? Captain. Yeah, it was Captain. It was Captain Universe. Yeah, Captain. Former members. So Captain Universe or Major Victory? I want to say it's
Major
Universe.
Victory was a classic one. That
Major
was Vance
Victory.
Astro.
It no, this is not Vance Astro. It was Captain Universe. I'm pretty sure it was Captain Universe. I'm going to look it up right now.
It's interesting because their costumes are not that different, but the backstory is very different. Captain Universe is somebody, an entity that can kind of take over or empower somebody.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's had it. Invisible Woman's had it. A bunch of other people have had it. Matter of fact, they did a 5-issue miniseries at Marvel at one point where it was kind of going through different people, seemed to land on somebody that would like keep it for a ways, and they promised an ongoing series that never materialized. I'm trying to remember if that was before or after the Annihilation Conquest stuff or not, and I don't recall.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy. It is. Yeah, he was in it. It's Captain Universe and his uni power. He was in it for a little bit. Yep.
Wow, I'd totally forgotten that part.
Yeah, but he was only in it for, you know, by the time Conquest ended, he was out and Drax was in and Gamora was in. And that's basically the team that we have for the movie now. But, you know, there's been other characters kind of in Guardians here and there, too. I mean, Angela's in Guardians now in the comics, we know, if you're following the comic now. So,
yeah. Well, and they've got this whole rotating Avenger slot with Iron Man, Captain Marvel. My money, Iron Patriot's going to be next.
Yep, that could be. Yep.
So it makes sense to leverage the movie coming out and see what they can do with it. But by and large, comic-based movies, unless they're on a based on a specific trade, which you could argue this trade would be that one for Guardians of the Galaxy, by and large, it doesn't really boost the sales. Now, obviously, Watchmen, Sin City, 300, where it's a very clear, you like the movie, this is the book to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Those do better, whereas Batman, Avengers, Spider-Man, you like it, go pick one of the titles, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, those don't see quite the same bump in sales. So it'll be interesting to see how this does, because they've already greenlit a second Guardians movie and the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So this could help sales of the title and just whatnot for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing.
Now, I will say this. I was talking to a couple of people, and just in passing, and they mentioned, and this is no surprise, that DCBS completely sold out of all their Guardians trades the past few weeks. I'm sure Marvel, if they're smart, are going to do new printings for these books and get them all back out. You know, Cosmic Avengers, The Abnett Landing, the Prelude, you know, that sort of thing. Get them all back out in print. The Valentino stuff, you know, get it all back out in print.
I would hope they were monitoring the stock levels they had on that very closely as the movie was getting ready to come out, and were ready to pull the trigger on that.
Yeah.
It should have just been not if or when, but how many do they print.
I mean, not only the recent stuff, not only the 2008 team, which essentially is the same team. I called it on my podcast a few weeks ago, the 2008 team and the 2013 team, which is a little bit different incarnation. You know, it's more movie-based, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the original Valentino run. So,
well, that's not even... Well, then there's the whole stuff back in the 70s, which I would have referred to as the original.
The original, right. And Yondu's.
I would have gone... Yeah. The original, I would have referred to Valentino's as the next-gen team.
The next-gen. That could be. Yeah. Because
they had the communicators. It was very Trekkie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
In a good way. I loved that run. I thought that was some of Valentino's, frankly, best work.
Mm-hmm.
On the subject of... back in print and things like that. What are your thoughts in terms of how it impacts sales momentum for a given volume of a series just to be out of print?
I think it affects it greatly. I mean, I see on the message boards and the forums on comic book resources, you know, when are they going to put this back in print? When are they going to put that back in print? And actually, that was a great answer to that. Happened to be at the panel that I talked about on last month with you, with the classic comics one, how, you know, they do a certain amount of print runs, and granted, these are for the Golden Age stuff, or you know, comic collection, or the Peanuts, or something like that, a little more specialty, but even to the Masterworks to an extent, or an omnibus, you know, they only get you do your initial orders through Diamond, which we always tell people. You and I, on your show Solo and my show Solo, to always pre-order. If you want it, pre-order it, right?
Yes.
I mean, you should. That way you're guaranteed a copy.
Well.
And, well, for the most
part. You've got a much better chance of getting it. I've had cases where I pre-ordered and still couldn't get it. So it's not.
Right.
If you've got a good retailer, it's basically a guarantee.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. And so, if you know, when it goes out of print and then you get a rush of people, could be like 50 people maybe in any given month who, you know, want the you know, I'm looking at my books right now, the Forbidden Worlds Dark Horse archives, you know, and they just didn't get volume one for whatever reason. And now it's out and it's like, sorry, you know, we might reprint it, but probably not. And maybe not this soon. So, you know, it's kind of a wait and see thing. You're better off paying the premium price on eBay if you really want it now, but then that gives you a lesson. If you really want that book, you know, better go get it. And I've learned my lesson the hard way in a lot of things like that, especially the omnibuses. So,
well, it pays to be educated in terms of who's coming out with it, who owns the rights, and just is it going to be able to get back in print?
Yeah.
Part of why I asked is I've got sitting over in my bookcase a little bit further than I can easily read from here because it's a black and purple trade dress on the side. But I've got volumes like 1, 2, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 or some such of Nicolai Dante. Mm-hmm. Now, these are the ones that were co-done by DC and 2000 AD.
Mm.
And I'm not sure when these were done. Last year, I'm at Comic-Con. I'm like, you know, I need number 3. I go up to the booth, and it's like, oh, do you have any Nicolai Dante? He's like, yeah, I got a few. But oh, you're looking for 3, aren't you? Yeah, that's long since out of print. Sorry. Like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, this year, same booth, same question, different answer. Because I clarified this time, because I had noticed Nicolai Dante books were coming out through 2000 AD Rebellion Press or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Different names. I'm like, oh, man, don't tell me that they're juggling what's in it by just an issue or two. So if I'm not careful, I'll like miss something or whatnot. No, they're just changing the names, changing the trade dress. But like the Nicolai Dante Love and More graphic novel on the current previews on page, I guess it's 379. That's the one I'm missing, or one of the ones I'm missing. And it's like, you know, I could have been searching for that forever, but knowing that it was a joint publication, that DC was no longer joint publishing it, okay, that's not going back into print from DC, that's a given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's go see if the other publisher is going to make a run with it on their own. In this case, they are.
So is the trade dress going to match it slightly at all, or is it completely different?
Probably not at all.
Yeah, and you're not one. I know you well enough that you're not going to go chase down a whole new collection.
I have unsuccessfully tried to.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get the whole new thing. No.
No, that's what I mean. You're not going to go run out and get all 12 new volumes just so they match up. You're not that crazy.
I'm not that crazy.
No.
I know some listeners are shaking their head thinking, no, he's that crazy. I am not.
Yeah.
I am kicking myself for having gotten all of these and not realizing that, you know, of course, if I'd known the others were out of print and this was going to happen, I'd have waited.
Yeah.
It's not like I've read the first two volumes yet.
Right.
But that's one of those things where how many times have we heard where like a given volume of what was it like Starman or I forget if it was Preacher, one or two others were just a key volume. Yep, it's out of print. Haven't gone back.
Haven't gone back. Right.
And it stalls people out on the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that these publishers, particularly Marvel, DC, Image, with this large back catalog, can't keep it all in print. I get that the smaller publishers don't have the resources to even incrementally necessarily reprint everything on a rotating basis. I mean, no publisher is in a good position on this, period.
Right.
But if the stuff is coming in dribs and drabs and Diamond can't get enough interest to actually cut a purchase order for enough to do a reprinting, the publishers then can't do the reprinting. It kind of, you know, is a perpetuating cycle. That's one of the things where long-term, because we're only a couple of years into this whole digital thing, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I had the option of getting the couple of trades I'm missing digitally, would I do it? Would I not? Gosh, I don't know. Certainly not on the price parity that things are currently at. But man, if I could go get the whole Nicolai Dante run digitally for a song or something, you know, I'd have considered that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and if that's something you want to go after, then so be it, man. Absolutely. I'd say go for it. You know, mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned, you know, getting the whole collection like that because, you know, I got a lot of Masterworks and I got every Masterwork, but, you know, when I look at it, something like Eerie and Creepy Archives from Dark Horse, you know, they're up to like volume 17 and it's by the sounds of it, they're not slowing down anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess I'm in it for the long haul for all 30 or 40 volumes or whatever it's going to be, you know, because I mean, I've come this far. Why stop kind of thing? You know, and same with my Masterworks. I mean, I've got 208 Masterworks or wherever it is. And why stop now? You know, might as well keep going. So now granted other stuff I'm slowing down on, I'm not getting nearly as much as I used to, but
I pulled the plug on the Archives and Masterworks. I think around the time they switched from $40 to $50.
Yeah.
This would have been back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go with that was one of the better decisions I made.
Yeah.
Because at the time, one of those coming out doubled my weekly cost at the comic shop.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, these
but,
days,
you know, but then again, it goes back to, you know, pre-ordering. You got to budget. Well, you got to budget for what you want. These Masterworks are not going out of print. I mean, you know, the early ones did, the Fantastic Four Volume 1, the Spider-Man, but you know, the Defenders Volume 5, you'll be able to pick that up at any convention for 50% off, you know, or, you know, whatever it is, Abe Books or something like that for half off on a Nick and Dent sale or something like that.
Well, if you're willing to take the dented version or whatever, that certainly opens up options.
Yeah.
But I worry when people think, oh yeah, I can always get this later, because I think that's one of the things that impacts trade and graphic novel and hardcover sales so much.
Right.
Is that belief. And it's generally true.
But that's the crapshoot. If you only have $50 to spend, you can't buy everything, right? And so you got to pick and choose. Hey, I'll just pick that up later. And hopefully it'll be for sale later, you know?
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's a crapshoot. What are you willing to gamble on? What do you really got to have? And it comes down to knowing your own tastes and your own budget and sometimes making some hard choices.
Yeah.
You know? I am thankful that I've got a job that allows me a bit more discretionary spending than I might otherwise have. And of course, I'm single. That certainly gives me a lot more discretionary spending than I might otherwise have.
Right.
There are some downsides to that. I will admit there are times I've gotten something on my list of, ooh, I have got to chase this down. It sounds so exciting, so interested. By the time I've assembled all the issues of it or whatever, I have forgotten why I hunted it down to begin with.
Yeah.
And of course, I've got enough new comics to read that finding time for the back issues is a little bit tough.
Yeah.
Well,
and then there's always the, you know, you do it in reverse and you've got too many books. Like I had the entire Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest in hardcover. And I sold those on eBay a couple of years ago. And man, am I kicking myself, because I would love, I could, for what I sold them, I could sell them for twice as much now, you know? So
the only comics I have sold were, I believe, was it the Death of the Family? Death in the Family, the original one where they killed off
Robin. Yeah.
Or it was Year One. One of those two. I had a spare set because I had bought doubles.
Well, if you got a spare set, you're okay.
Yeah, I had a spare set. There was a store starting up. It needed something to put under the glass on their counter. And it's like, yeah, that'll get him some bucks, whatever. He's a friend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like I'm out the issues either. So I accumulate. What can I say?
I have Death in the Family in the first, I guess it would be a collected edition, the first printing of that, which is really nice to have. So it's kind of beat up. I bought it secondhand a couple of years ago, you know, but or actually more than a couple of years, probably 10 years ago. But yeah, it's a nice little thing to have, because they don't, you know, is that kind of like a soft cover prestige collection?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't really a shiny trade paperback cover and it wasn't floppy. It was, you know, that prestige kind of thing where it collected whatever issues it was.
It was one of those, if I'm recalling correctly, that's about the same sort as the first Great Darkness Saga trade.
Yeah.
And the Judas Contract trade. These were some of the early collected trade paperback edition sort of things before that was really a thing.
Right.
And it's just, it's amazing. I mean, now we've got a list of 300 such items each and every month. It's like, wow, has the industry changed over those couple of decades.
Yeah.
And in some ways better, in some ways worse. I think it's awesome that between the Masterworks, the Omnibuses, the Absolutes, the Trades, the Hardcovers, whatever, there is some stuff you can get a hold of that there is just no way you could chase down the individual issues of.
Oh, no. Not a chance.
Nope. I think that is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a number of things that, well, again, Nikolai Dante. That was done in 2000 AD. I would have to get so many different issues of that, and this was just, because that's an anthology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be paying whatever it costs per issue for a, you know, feature out of I don't know how many features every issue to do that. It's like, that's just not cost effective, if I can find them and so forth. So I think it's awesome that trades have opened that up.
Mm-hmm.
Between the Marvel Digital Unlimited and just, you know, what Comixology and stuff is doing, digital is starting to open a lot of that up. But there's going to come a point where is the price point conducive and is the software and the material, or the content in the software, organized well enough to be conducive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this is where I think Marvel is on to something with their Digital Unlimited thing. You can get somebody kind of hooked into start here, read forward, and that can keep them entertained. And if you can match the right stuff to the right reader, man, that's the best way to get somebody hooked on comics. You know, I wish DC would do something of the sort.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a big Marvel fan, don't get me wrong. Huge Marvel fan. But I grew up on Super Friends, the Batman cartoons and TV shows.
Oh, sure.
You know, I am a more native resident of the DC universe than of the Marvel universe, I guess would be the way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You
going to buy the Batman 66 DVDs when it comes out?
Oh, absolutely not.
No?
I've already got the Blu-rays on order, though.
No, but you are going to get the series. Yeah.
No, seriously, I'm not going to get the DVDs. I've got the Blu-rays pre-ordered at Amazon.
I think I'm going to get it. I think it, because it's a limited edition, right? It's going to be limited, so I think I might as well pick it up. I mean, it'll be on Netflix for the next 50 years, though. You know?
Yeah,
so who knows?
Yeah. Sam posted on the forum that was available, and I'm like, ooh, the DVDs. Are they going to do a Blu-ray?
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, right here. Boom. It's like, okay, ordered that. So yeah. he ordered a set, I ordered a set, and then that was before San Diego when they announced what the price and the extras and all that was going to be. So I'm pretty sure we got it at just a great deal compared to what they bounced up the price to be. I think Amazon may have jumped the gun a little on that.
Okay.
But, you know, when it comes out in November-ish or whatever, and I actually have my copy and know how much I did pay, because I've pre-ordered. It's got many months to dip down even for a millisecond lower, and I'll get the savings.
Yeah. Is it going to have the Batman Adam West movie in it?
That is an excellent question. I do not know.
Okay.
I believe I've got that movie on DVD.
Yeah.
But I would have to go check.
Yeah.
I've got a fairly extensive DVD collection.
Yeah.
The choice I made, and I'm not going to phrase it as a mistake, although strong argument could be made that it was. I dragged my feet getting into Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I should have gotten a Blu-ray or you know, full HD projector sooner. Now that I've got that, I'm getting the Blu-rays and such. And yeah, the projector I've got is awesome. And Blu-ray 3D, it's like, geez, this is like being at the theater at home.
Right.
You know, it's part of why I traditionally don't go out to the theater as much. Flip side, there are a lot of movies coming out I really want to go see sooner rather than later, so I'm actually going to the theater a lot more this year than I have in the past. But, you know, hey, that works out too.
The list price for the limited edition is $270. You can get it on Amazon Prime for $180.
That's what I think I paid.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, it's cheesy, it's dated, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It is what it is, but if you want to watch it for the laughs and the ludicrousness, you can do that. If you want to watch it as just it's a straight telling of Batman stories, you know, and the melodrama, the overacting is certainly there, but not to a point where you can't just enjoy it as a good Batman story of that ilk.
Right.
You know what I mean? In other words, there is a serious non-comedic poking fun at Batman take to be had for the material. At least I thought that as a kid and have ever since. You know, it's a little overblown, though. I still want to see DC do that Batman meets the TV Superman and the TV Wonder Woman of the 70s and whatnot.
Right.
Just kind of mix those together because I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's what the... I don't know if you recall the Tomorrow's book, and I'll caveat by saying I work for Tomorrow's sometimes, but they did the Age of TV Heroes book, and Alex Ross did the cover with George Reeves. It wasn't Christopher Reeves. It was George Reeves and Linda Carter and Shazam, whoever.
Oh,
Shazam
what's
his face?
I'm blanking on his name.
I know.
I'd add him to the mix too. That was a great show.
So if they could get the rights for all that, you know. That'd be a lot of fun. I don't know if you'd want to do a George Reeves or do a Christopher Reeve. I don't know. I mean, probably, I mean, it's TV, you know, if you want to do a George, I guess. But
I would do it as two miniseries, one that does the TV, followed up with one that does the movies of the Keaton Batman, the Christopher Reeve Superman.
That would be cool, yeah.
And it gets pretty thin from there. And then have them meet. Because I think it'd be Earth 1, Earth 2 kind of a shtick there. Could be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, yeah. And bring back Nicholson's Joker, and yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be all for it, yeah.
I think DC and Warner Brothers missed an opportunity, and maybe it's not too late. They should buy up the Filmation assets.
Oh, for sure.
Because that would give them the ISIS that they've tried to recreate.
Mm-hmm.
It would give them a lot of things that they pretty much put the kibosh on with Super Stretch and Micro Woman and a bunch of those other Tarzan and the Super Seven characters. And I'm trying to think what other properties Filmation did that they kind of owned outright versus just did, you know, licensed stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
It may not have been the greatest animation, but I mean, they had a lot of cartoons out for a long time.
Oh yeah. Every Saturday there was something on.
Well, and just for years and years and years and tons of different things. I don't remember if they did the Groovy Ghoulies or whatever, but I'm pretty sure the Filmation library is extensive enough that it would be a welcome addition to whoever were to actually take it and run with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lou Scheimer book that Tomorrow's did too, that's a fantastic book if you're into Filmation, John.
I've got that. I just need to. I started reading it.
That's
and
a
I only
thick
got...
book too. I remember when I came in the mail, I'm like, man, this is a lot thicker than a regular Tomorrow's book. This has got a ton of information in it.
Yeah, it's on my to read list. It's just many things are like about the last 5 weeks of comics.
Oh yeah,
four. I think I've gotten most of that fifth week. That July 9th week, almost done.
And you have to go see a certain movie.
Gotta go see Guardians. I want to go see Lucy. I want to go see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Those will both probably wait for DVD or Blu-ray. Yeah. And I'm going up to Toronto soon for the Fan Expo.
Oh, there you go.
So plenty to be doing.
Did you see Godzilla?
I did not.
I didn't see Godzilla either. I'm waiting for the video for that.
Yeah. Unless they've got five teenagers with attitude fighting him, not that interested.
Yeah.
All right, back to the list. Speaking of five teenagers with attitude, rank 122, we've got the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Volume 1 graphic novel. 1,111 units, not too bad, not too bad. They did two versions of this, but I think there's only the one on the list. I think they did a graphic novel and a hardcover version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be interesting to see how the Power Rangers franchise and property goes. Both they're doing reasonably well in the graphic novel area, I think. But also the TV show continues, and they're going to be turning it into a major motion picture. They've got a screenwriter who's got credits for one of the X-Men movies working on it. That's going to be interesting to see how that shapes up. If they can take a property that's been a hit for the kids market for 20 years, expand it to a bit more of an all ages appeal and stuff. I think it's already got that based on, you know, it having its own convention going on a fifth year now with Power Morphicon. That could be very interesting just to see how that does. That would be one of the few and probably about the only one I can think of superhero franchises that didn't originate in comics, technically, but originated on TV.
Right. Huh.
And also one of the few that originated pretty much overseas. I say pretty much on both those. I'm hedging my bets a little bit in so much as Power Rangers is based on the Super Sentai stuff in Japan. That's been going on 37 series, going back to, I think, 75. They did Go Ranger, Battle Fever J. Battle Fever J was a co-production with Marvel Comics and starring Miss America, which was essentially a revamped version of the Miss America from the Invaders.
Mm-hmm.
And then Toei, the production company, did the Japanese Spider-Man series. Then they went and did the Super Sentai that have been continuing ever since. So it's a property that does have roots of sorts in print comics of America, but it's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Couple items down for that, rank 125. Gosh, how much a difference a year makes. Hawkeye Volume 1, My Life is a Weapon, trade paperback. This is reorder activity. It's another 1,080 units, putting it up to 32,052 units. This covers, how many issues does this one cover? 1 through 5.
From 1 through 5, yes.
So there's another volume out there before this completely spun out of control, shipping late, in the wrong order, and I think taking what was a fan favorite comic a year ago and squandering all that goodwill completely.
Yeah. I mean, oh, it won a couple Eisner Awards. I mean, yeah. So
Pizza Dog issue was great, mm-hmm. and they haven't really come out with a whole lot since.
Now, this I think the series just got canceled, if I'm not mistaken.
Seriously?
I think so. And
I have not heard that.
Yeah, I think there was some chatter on the forums that it was going to get canceled, and then it'll all be collected in one omnibus.
Including the canceled issues? Or
including the canceled issues, yeah. So
you know why I believe that?
I will keep looking it up, yeah. But
If you do, let me know. Post on the comic page forums on that. Mm-hmm. I believe that because that's about the only thing they could do that I think would be even more unfan-friendly than what they've done before.
Mm-hmm.
Shipping issues late, bad. Shipping them out of orders, bad. Right. Raising the price after solicitation on all the future issues, that's bad. And they did that mm-hmm. too. But canceling and aborting to trade, man, that's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a shame because they were doing such... the Pizza Dog issue, Drew and I reviewed that, and I'm like, you know, okay, we'll take a shot. You know, we'll see how it is. I was curious how well that issue was going to do. It was brilliant. I'm really disappointed with how things went down on that title. And I don't blame anyone. I think one of the creators just got into a bad spot in life and had other things going on that got in the way of the day job. And that sucks for anybody. I've seen people go through it. I've had a coworker recently who was, you know, had enough things going on that it happens is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a question of can they recover from that and move forward, and frankly, ending the title and letting things settle down and getting that team either on that title or something else moving forward later makes sense. Probably not a bad choice.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's a couple of Hawkeye and Thunderbolts coming to an end. Mm-hmm. Because I knew Thunderbolts was.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to end with the wrapping up Punisher versus the Thunderbolts. But yeah, canceled.
Interesting.
Let's see what issue that's going to be. Let's see, that's 22, so probably 25.
Huh.
Something like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Hawkeye 22 in October. That might be the final one. And then Thunderbolts 32 in October. That will be the final one.
Yeah. That's not too surprising. Once issues get to issue yeah. numbers get above 30 or whatever, they're not long for this world over at Marvel these days.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I just noticed on the list that I find just intriguing is at rank 193, we've got from DC Comics for $12.99, History of the DC Universe.
Mm-hmm.
This is the trade paperback. I believe it just collects the two issues that were prestige format.
Okay.
And it was the definitive history of the DC Universe as told immediately after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
So this is back in print or something like that? Or now, how would a book like this get back on the list? I mean,
it sold 731 copies. Ah, I can tell you how it got back on the list. If you look over at the retail rank, it is the same price as the item below it, Terraformers number 1 from Viz Comics. Both are $12.99. But that item just below it, which sold the same 731 units, had a retail rank of 275, whereas the History of the DC Universe had a retail rank of 766.
Okay.
This is something that was just blown out the doors, probably on a progressive sale.
The last printing I see of this was from 2009.
This is probably that printing.
Yeah, with the Alex Ross cover to it. Yep.
I mean, it makes sense to blow this out. Yeah, blow this one out the door and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny that a couple of years after Flashpoint and the New 52, you know, nearly 3 years after, to see that pop up on the list. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, that is so disconnected from the current DC reality as to not even be funny. Another one, a couple others that are further down on the list that are also kind of, wow, these are odd to see. We've got the Cinder and Ash trade paperback down at rank 211. That was done, I'm thinking, late 80s.
That was late 80s. That was a new printing a couple years ago, too. I do remember that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like there's some older material that...
they're blowing them out, eh?
Popping up almost randomly, yeah.
Cinder and Ash from... no, this was... this says paperback July 8th, 2014. I'm on Amazon right now.
Who's the creative team on this?
Jerry Conway and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
That's right. Very talented guys. It was good stuff.
This is the new... Yeah, this is the new printing of it. Yeah, brand new. July 8th, 2014.
Do you think DC owns the copyright on that? Or do you think that's those guys? I got to imagine it's DC.
Publisher. It says DC Comics is a publisher here on Amazon. So... yeah, I imagine it's DC.
This is the sort of property, if I were looking for another title to do, maybe not as ongoing, but maybe as a miniseries for the New 52, I'd pull out something like this.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. Yeah.
It's fun. It's different. It's do a rotating series of these sorts of things just to flesh out the universe. You know, have these characters sitting in the background, have... other creators know that, hey, you know, once we've set these guys up, they're fair game to play with. Give them some visibility. Do what they did with Zatanna before she joined the Justice League, where she was showing up in different people's books on a rotating basis.
Yep.
It makes the universe seem bigger, more interconnected, more real, without having really crossovers, per se. There's a lot you can do with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this series, you're right, it's from 1988, Cinder and Ash. Four issues.
Yeah,
it
was good stuff.
Yeah, I should pick this back up. This is pretty good.
The Hawkeye Volume 2 trade paperback is down at 227 with 652 units of reorder activity, putting its known total up to around 19,485 units. That covers 6 through 11. Mm-hmm. So I think that would include the Pizza Dog issue.
Okay.
Not positive, though. it's one of the few issues I read thinking, you know, this should go up for an Eisner.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it won, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
You see anything else on the list that particularly strikes your fancy is worth talking about?
Not really. I think it's a pretty normal list. You know, I'm looking at the bottom here. There's not much on here that catches my eye.
Almost half the list is reorder activity.
Yeah.
Which is not too surprising. Again, nature of the beast on this. Last time we talked, you were going to pick up Attack on Titans No Regrets. Have you done that?
No, I haven't done that yet. I'm sorry.
No rush. If you do, shoot me an email and stuff. I'll pick that up. Maybe we'll think about doing an episode on that. Because I'm curious about Attack on Titan, having seen so much of it at the conventions I've been at lately.
I just talked to you a week ago.
I know.
like I said, yesterday.
I haven't done anything either.
You and I sometimes go 6 weeks without talking to each other, and here we are talking with each other in 7 days. Very strange.
It's even more strange for me because last week, between recording the San Antonio convention episode with my sister, the next day recording with you, the next day recording with Sam, the next day recording with Drew, and now kind of rinse-repeat of I'm recording with you tonight, Sam tomorrow... possibly an episode with my sister for Guardians of the Galaxy Wednesday night because
I was gonna say you have to go see Guardians, man. You gotta find a time to go see it.
The plan is to do that Wednesday and then Thursday recording again with Drew. So inside of 2 weeks, I'll have done two weeks, I'll have done 8 episodes or something, which is
oh my god,
way too many. That's part of why I can't catch up on my comics, is I'm too busy podcasting.
You have too many podcasts. You need to take a break.
I think I do too.
Man,
let's see. Price points: $19.99, very popular. 55 items: $14.99, fairly popular. 53 items, 28 at $24.99, 27 at $16.99. Looks like most of the list was $20 or less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, three quarters of the list. That's good. I like that. Cheaper is better.
Cheaper is better.
Gives people more chance to buy stuff. I think it's good to have high ticket items, but
yeah.
I remember a couple of years back where it seemed like there was a lot of high ticket items.
Yeah.
And I think that drains resources away from other stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's particularly great.
No, I like that. Yeah, that $14.99 is a good price point because, you know, you're always going to pick it up on sale at 30% off somewhere too. So,
well, if you can get the price down to where it's like, you know, for that seems worth it. What the heck?
Mm-hmm.
The minute the price is big enough, ooh, man, I got to think about this. You know, that's a barrier to purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do that enough, and then people start really looking at how much they're spending just across the board.
Right.
And that's not great. It reduces sales in general. Fewer sales, fewer things to read, that's just bad. We become an illiterate society from there, anarchy, and we're doomed. I'm trying to save the world here, can't you see?
One podcast at a time.
Exactly. Speaking of one podcast at a time, what do you got coming up on your show?
I'm going to have Mr. Steve Bryant of Athena Voltaire on my show.
Awesome.
And we're going to talk about not only the Kickstarter campaign, but how it led to the book being published over at Dark Horse and whatever else is new from Steve. And yeah, it should be a pretty good interview. I haven't talked to Steve I talk to Steve every once in a while, but not mm-hmm. on the podcast. So it's going to be great to have him back on the show and to see what he's doing these days.
Cool. I hope.
What about you?
Going well. Well, let's see. We've talked about how we're doing too many of these episodes too quickly together. So now that we should be back on a regular schedule.
Yes.
We've got that. We've got, I've got a couple episodes waiting to go. I've still got to put a release last week's comics episode that I did with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So we're recording this on, August 11th. So between now and when this goes up will have been the preview spotlight, the comics episode for June with Sam. The weekly comic spotlight that I've got to go read, Batwing, Superior Spider-Man, and Genius 4. Then the preview spotlight interviews episode, which is really just the Comic-Con previews panel. They did a great job, and I had gotten permission ahead of time to record it and release it in a half hour-ish or so. A lot of good information on previews and the Previews World website. Well worth the time to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
These guys put together a good thing each and every month and really each and every day on the website. So we got that. This then goes up. Following that, another weekly comic spotlight. And then Orphan Black episode that I recorded at Comic-Con will go up at some point.
Oh, obviously,
cool. The Mayo Report comics will go up at some point, depending when I watch it, the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Also on the plan, but not scheduled yet. My sister and I will probably do another episode on Continuum, and we've got a bunch of other movies that we just need to find some time to watch and then record about. My sister seems to be enjoying those episodes. They tend to be a lot of fun. Some of those may go up first on her website, popartsplace.com, because there's a couple, and I'd be willing to like to hear what listeners have to say on this. There are a couple that I think would be fun to do, but are strictly speaking not comic book related as such.
Mm-hmm.
Everything kind of tangentially comes back to that. But like we picked up the Moonshot DVD that was originally done by the History Channel because we heard about it at the James Marsters panel at the Wizard World San Antonio. Like, that could be fun to watch and then maybe record about, or just watch and maybe not record about. But if we record mm-hmm. about it, does it make sense to put on this feed or not? So it's one thing if it's Guardians of the Galaxy. It's based on a comic or something.
Yeah. No, but then, actually, you should do it. It'll be fun.
When does it get a little too far afield for people to be okay with that?
Yeah.
And I'm curious about hearing what they say, but, I mean, bottom line, my podcast, I want to put it up. I will.
Yeah, do what you want.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But the other thing I've got going on is I've still got these I've got a table full of comics. I've got five short box lids overflowing with comics going as far back as July 9th. I think I've read most of those, but I need to go check my notes. I have not been updating my rating spreadsheet for like a month, and I need to get on that. So get that, scan those things into my secondary comic tracking system, and then start working on the week of the 16th, the 23rd, the 30th, and then start into August. One of the things that makes talking about the July numbers challenging sometimes is normally I've read most of what's come out on the comics side of the list, at least a third, if not two thirds of it. This time, not so much, unless I get a bunch of comics read between now and tomorrow when I record with Sam, which isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I got going on.
Sweet.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good, John. It's always good to talk to you.
Always fun. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.